from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Superstorm Sandy swamps the East Coast, and the long presidential campaign goes to final days. An historic storm lashes into New York. Here's a reporter in a helicopter over Staten Island surveying the damage.
All of these homes underwater. Again, we're talking about a good 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 blocks inland, a good mile or so inland before the water finally recedes over here.
And across New Jersey, devastation. Here's Little Ferry resident Vincent Gachon holding his dog, losing everything.
Heartbreak. Oh, you've lost. And then you're looking at stuff. There's nothing there no more. Nothing. You can't salvage anything.
In the campaign home stretch, 4-year-old Abby Evans of Fort Collins, Colorado, couldn't take it anymore. Here's the viral video. She was listening with her mom to NPR.
I'm tired of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
That's why you're crying? Oh, it'll be over soon, Abby. Okay? The election will be over soon, okay?
Okay.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with David Shepherdson of the Detroit News, Margaret Tolliff of Bloomberg News, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation. What does Sandy say to you? What do the jobs numbers say? What's your closing argument for Mitt Romney, for Barack Obama? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington is David Shepherdson, Washington Bureau Chief for the Detroit News. David, welcome back to On Point.
Oh, thanks, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Margaret Tolliff, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Margaret, great to have you back as well.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, David, and Margaret.
So much big weather, so much pain this week. Here's another of those voices, Sayreville, New Jersey, a resident there getting emotional, talking with Governor Chris Christie yesterday about the damage to her home.
All ruined down here, yeah. Every ounce of it, ruined. Yeah. Nothing. It's a shame. It's a shame.
All ruined. In Hoboken, New Jersey, across from Manhattan on Wednesday, Mayor Don Zimmer asked anyone who could to help bring supplies to the city recovering, trying to, from Hurricane Sandy.
We need more food. We need more resources. So anyone who's listening to this in the city of Hoboken or neighboring towns who can get to us, we ask you to come and deliver your supplies.
Margaret Tolliff, David, Jack, I mean, here we go again. A year ago, it was Hurricane Irene. We've seen storm after storm. This, an epic large one in a key home stretch political week. Margaret Tolliff, I guess you watched this from Washington, but just your reaction to what we've seen here on the TV screen and maybe right up close in person in this week of superstorm, Margaret.
That's right. I mean, look, this would have been absolutely a devastating sort of storm that America would have been glued around their TV sets to watch anyway. But when it comes a week before the general election campaign, it had an undeniable political narrative and effect as well. It stopped the campaign in its tracks. It changed the tone of the campaign and the focus of the campaign. And it put it much more solidly on President Obama's ground in terms of being able to drive the narrative.
David, take it as a meteorological event, as a human event first. Have you heard from friends in New York? Do you have family up that way? What did you see on TV? How do you take on board just the scale of this storm?
We didn't know, of course, being in Washington, whether it was going to hit us. And, of course, there was very little damage in Washington, but we were following it like everyone else. My mother-in-law and father-in-law live in the Boston area. They were without power for 2.5 days. A lot of friends have evacuated from New York, are still evacuated. And, to see the images, especially in the largest, basically the capital of the world, New York, what also came across to me was the fact that as a direct result of this storm, Mayor Bloomberg endorsed President Obama, saying that there had been basically no discussion of climate change. And, of course, we don't know with any certainty whether this was a result of climate change. All we know is what the climate scientists say, is that if climate change continues, we will have more higher intensity storms and hurricanes like this. And as Margaret said, I think this has changed the dynamic. You saw the the pictures of Governor Christie and the president, you know, both commending one another, you know, bringing back a spirit of bipartisanship. But, you know, to see those pictures of Rockaway and the 110 homes, yeah. I mean, you couldn't, you know, and the devastation, the amusement park rides
the
and the
roller coaster. Flooding, yeah.
And I mile mean, after it, mile of neighborhoods just washed out.
I mean, I don't know what other, it reminded me a little bit, of course, the Japanese tsunami, not the same level of devastation or deaths or and Katrina. And the fact that, you know, as a country, we have built homes very close to the shore in areas with, you know, that are going to be more and more prone to these hurricanes. And, you know, three of the most devastating storms ever in New York have taken place in the last 100 years. And I think the sad thing going forward is that we're going to see more storms like this. And this is not the end, but the beginning of life, you know, with more carbon or climate change impacts expected in the years to come.
Jack, I want to come to you on Sandy, but Margaret, I've got to come to you. You're with Bloomberg News. I'm looking here at the brand new edition of Business Week. And of course, it's Bloomberg Business Week. And in huge letters across the front, I've never seen anything quite like this in a mainstream, traditionally conservative magazine in this country, a business person's magazine. And the big, huge headline is, "It's Global Warming, Stupid." What do you make of that, Margaret? There is a statement. Is that Mayor Bloomberg sending that right down through his organization saying, I want this front and center? Is that the editors of Business Week magazine? Is it the business community tallying up the $50 billion-plus losses in this storm and saying, we can't go on like this?
Well, thanks for that question, Tom.
Sure.
No, I just need to do the obvious disclaimer that although Mayor Bloomberg is the founder of Bloomberg News' parent company, that I didn't have any advance knowledge about his endorsement yesterday or any of that.
Fair enough. Nobody can miss this cover. This is hello, in your face. It's Global Warming, Stupid. Banner headline.
Right, no, I mean, it's a very provocative magazine cover, and it was a provocatively timed endorsement by the mayor, meant to have impact, obviously. And I don't think that this represents any total uniformity about how to respond to or deal with climate change, but I do think it represents one trend, one thread of people with influential voices who have concerns about this and see it as the combination of a social and economic issue, and something in which politicians have been slow to take the lead, right? I mean, look at Congress, even under Democratic-led you know, Senate and previously Democratic-led House, and you've had a Democratic president, and these are people who talk the talk but have not been able to or not been willing to or both engage in a particularly forward action-provoking level.
Tom, can I just jump in for 1 second?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the reason that Congress, the presidential candidates, have not addressed climate change is it's not a fun subject. The only remedies are expensive. You know, capping carbon is not going to be cheap. Changing our behavior, moving to renewable sources of electricity are going to be more expensive. And so in a campaign season, there's been little incentive for either candidate to talk about the impact of climate change or the fact that, you know, changing or, you know, reducing, you know, carbon emissions is expensive. And in an election year, candidates don't want to talk about, the hard stuff. It's better to talk about things that people it's going to be easier for people.
Sure, but the super amped up storms we've been seeing are incredibly expensive, too. Jack Beatty, jump in here. Here's Business Week, traditionally a really conservative business person's magazine. They're saying not enough attention is being paid to this. In their big editorial accompanying this headline, it says, after Sandy, that seems insane. Here's the business voice speaking, Jack.
Yes, and from on just basic self-interest grounds, these great collective disasters remind us of a collective peril that is lurking out there. I mean, the New York Times points out that potentially, if things keep going as they are, there could be a rise of 2 feet in the waters around New York over the next 40 years. How that can be dealt with short of some massive government effort on the one hand to prevent more climate change and on the other hand to make the city more resilient, it'll take great sacrifice. You know, this throws into relief the differences between the campaigns on issues of climate and energy, and USA Today sums them up. On climate change, Mr. Romney says there's a lack of scientific consensus on it. We don't know, he says, what's causing climate change. Mr. Obama, climate change is not a hoax. On clean air, Mr. Romney, he seeks to eliminate the EPA's power to regulate carbon dioxide and remove its rules limiting emissions from coal plants. Mr. Obama supports the authority of the EPA on those grounds. Vehicle fuel efficiency, this is one thing that Mr. Bloomberg drew attention to. Mr. Romney opposes the efficiency mandates that that Obama won, and Obama, those efficiency mandates on automakers would double fuel economy to 54 miles by 2025. Mr. Romney says that consumers will have to spend more on cars than they'll save by using gas and renewables. Mr. Obama favors renewal of the tax credit for utility scale wind producers. Romney opposes that. So clear differences up and down on the question of climate and energy.
Well, look at that. Bill Clinton picked it up on Tuesday. University of Minnesota in the Twin Cities, right as a hurricane had just come in, the former president attacking Mitt Romney there for mocking in his convention speech a couple months ago President Obama's efforts on climate change. Here's Clinton.
He ridiculed the president for his efforts to fight global warming in economically beneficial ways. He said, oh, you're going to turn back the seas. In my part of America, we would like it if someone could have done that yesterday.
Surely this week in New Jersey, Margaret, to turning back the seas would have been great. I mean, you can't lay it all on one cause here, but Business Week is saying, look, if it's amping up these storms, we can't afford this. We can't afford a string of these, Margaret.
That's right. And I think, you know, what you saw in New Jersey with Governor Christie, of course, a Republican governor of a Democratic state, welcoming President Obama, praising President Obama for the administration's response and willingness to answer the call of the storm, was not the narrative that Mitt Romney would have preferred.
No, not this week. We'll look at Mitt Romney and the rest. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, Superstorm Sandy, and the final dash to Election Day. David Shepherdson joins us from the Detroit News, their Washington bureau chief. Margaret Tolliver is with us, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Jack Beatty's here. Here was President Obama on Wednesday, a press conference in front of the remains of a community center in Brigantine, New Jersey, pledging to repair the damage caused by Sandy, warning it could be a slow process.
We're going to have a lot of work to do. I don't want anybody to feel that somehow this is all going to get cleaned up overnight. We want to make sure that people have realistic expectations. But what I can promise you is that the federal government will be working as closely as possible with the state and local officials, and we will not quit until this is done.
Mitt Romney, on Tuesday at a rally in Kettering, Ohio, asked all attendees to bring canned foods and goods for victims of Hurricane Sandy.
We won't be able to solve all the problems with our effort this morning. There are a lot of people that will still be looking for goods, even though we've gathered these things, as you know. But I know that one of the things I've learned in life is that you make the difference you can. And you can't always solve all the problems yourself, but you can make the difference in the life of one or two people.
Mitt Romney there in Ohio and in New Jersey. The Governor Chris Christie here telling Fox News he was grateful to President Obama for his leadership in responding to the hurricane.
The president was great last night. He said he would get it done. At 2 a.m., I got a call from FEMA to answer a couple of final questions, and then he signed the declaration this morning. So I have to give the president great credit. He's been on the phone with me three times in the last 24 hours. He has been very attentive, and anything that I've asked for, he's gotten to me. So I thank the president publicly for that. He has done, as far as I'm concerned, a great job for New Jersey.
Governor Chris Christie, Republican. Interesting moment for that praise for the president right in the home stretch to Election Day. Stephen in Cranston, Rhode Island is calling. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just like to point out how this storm has highlighted the flaws in the Romney-Ryan budget. They call for large tax cuts, and the only way to pay for things like that would be to underfund programs like FEMA, and it's so clear that we need them.
And there's a view out of Rhode Island. Margaret, how about it? I mean, we all remember, what was it last year, Mitt Romney in that debate, primary debate, asked if he would take FEMA away to the states, if it would be hit in funding cuts. His response was absolutely. This week he was a little more supportive in the midst of the storm. But what about our caller's observation?
That's right. I mean, what Romney said, that was back in June 2011. He was asked about FEMA. He said, every time you have an occasion to take something from the federal government and send it back to the states, that's the right direction.
And not just the states. He went on to say private, to the private economy even better.
Right.
And so you didn't hear him saying that this week. He was out on the trail. We had a reporter out with him, and he was declining to answer questions about whether he would return FEMA authority to the states, because if you were going to make that case, this would hardly be the week to make it, days before an election.
So, but David, does that end up hurting him here, or he's still carrying the flag there for individual responsibility? Even with this storm, a lot of Americans looking over their shoulder at all that debt and saying, what do we do here, folks?
No, the caller raises a good point, which is that the governor has sort of laid out the broad strokes of a plan to cut tax rates, across the board and remove, get rid of some unspecified deductions, and then cut federal spending. But he has not been very clear about what programs would be cut, and so we don't know definitively that something like FEMA might be cut. And in fact, later this week, after resisting questions, he did say he would, continue to fund FEMA if elected president. But it does point out a broader question that this storm has raised about the role and size of government, and that do storms like this, do natural disasters mean that as a country we need a larger, more robust federal government to address issues like this? Or can, as in the primary debate, can we send money back to states, basically say to states, hey, you can handle this on your own? And clearly, there's two different philosophies at odds here in general between the Republicans and Democrats, and the Democrats would say, no, we need a more robust funding from the federal government. In fact, a year ago, the federal government almost shut down, remember, in September of 2011, because Republicans were objecting to more disaster assistance. So this issue is going to continue, especially if more of these type storms come up.
Now, that's the policy argument, but the political argument is that until the storm, Governor Romney was talking on the trail about this distinction between him proposing less, less government, more efficient government, and Obama being a big government proponent. The storm stopped that narrative. It took away something that he wanted to talk about on the stump.
Jack, we've just got days before, four or five days here before the actual vote. We've got to go big here. David says we don't know definitively what would happen this way or that. But this issue of knowing definitively has become another issue around Mitt Romney. And there he was saying in the debate, absolutely, he'd, take a whack at FEMA. This week saying, no, there have been many of those. Mayor Bloomberg pointing those out in his endorsement of Barack Obama, saying you've got to know where somebody stands. There have been too many changes here. This issue of who's voting for what on Tuesday, Barack Obama's got his problems with this unemployment number ticking back up, with the lack of stronger growth in these years. But around Mitt Romney, and I mean, you've seen him in Massachusetts, Jack, this issue of where does he stand?
It can't be escaped. The Salt Lake City Tribune, in its editorial endorsing Barack Obama, put it in best, I think, in its headline, "Too Many Mitts." They simply found that the inconsistencies too great. They didn't know where he would come down. They couldn't predict, they couldn't project a plausible Romney presidency. And the president is picking up on this and saying, this is an issue of trust. You don't know what this man is going to say. He will say whatever will get him 51%. And the Romney people are coming back and saying, wait a minute, the governor is flexible. The governor adapts to change circumstances. He's pragmatic. He's shown that in Massachusetts. And I think, of course, David can talk to this more, but I think the back and forth over these construably mendacious ads that Mr. Romney has been running about the auto bailout in Ohio, that has also raised this trust question, but in a different way. That's the idea of an almost kind of ruthlessness on the part of the Romney campaign, a willingness to say anything.
David, we've got you with the Detroit News. Let's do some fact-checking here. Romney campaign ad began running in Ohio on Saturday, went after the Obama administration with some specific charges around the handling of the auto bailout, but American jobs, they're declaring here, ending up in China. Let's listen to the ad.
Who will do more for the auto industry? Not Barack Obama. Fact-checkers confirm his attacks on Mitt Romney are false. The truth? Mitt Romney has a plan to help the auto industry. He's supported by Lee Iacocca and the Detroit News. Obama took GM and Chrysler into bankruptcy and sold Chrysler to Italians who are going to build Jeeps in China. Mitt Romney will fight for every American job.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Okay, a little piece by piece, supported by the Detroit News. Is your editorial page supporting the Mitt Romney, David? What's their argument?
They did support him, I think, in general economic terms, although they did specifically criticize his, quote, wrongheadedness on the bailout.
And what about the claim here, you know, that Obama took GM and Chrysler to bankruptcy, sold Chrysler to Italians, going to build Jeeps in China, the suggestion that Obama has sent Jeep building jobs to China?
That contention is wrong, but let's unpack the assertions in there. Number one, it is true that President Obama, as part of the $85 billion auto bailout, did force GM and Chrysler into bankruptcy, and as part of that, he required Chrysler to merge with Fiat, the Italian automaker, which got a 35% stake in the company initially, now does own a majority of Chrysler.
And Chrysler's doing very well now, if I understand their books correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. 31 straight months of increase in sales. They were up 10% in October. This is their best October monthly sales since 2007. And the company is doing very well. It had an 80% increase in third quarter profits. Now, the key issue, which began a week ago Thursday when the governor picked up blogs that had misinterpreted a Bloomberg News story about this issue, that Chrysler was planning to build Jeeps in China for Chinese consumers. Like Toyota, Ford, GM all build vehicles in China for Chinese consumers, in part because of hefty tariffs that China imposes on exported vehicles. But this got misinterpreted by these right-leaning blogs as Jeep to move all production to China, close all these factories in Toledo and Detroit and Northern Ohio, obviously a big campaign issue. The governor repeated this this line in the speech, which then began what's now a 9-day controversy about this issue. And then this ad, the fact checkers say, really does mislead people, or people can misinterpret the idea that this is moving jobs from the U.S. to China.
Joe Biden went after it hard on Florida. Listen here, I'll come right back to you, David. Here he is on Wednesday slamming the ad, calling it one of the most flagrantly dishonest ads I can ever remember in my political career. Biden.
It's an outrageous lie. A lie, that's so deceptive and so patently untrue that the Chrysler Corporation, including the chairman of the board of Chrysler, they actually spoke up. They don't want to get involved in presidential politics, but they spoke up. They called a quote, I'm going to quote, a leap that would be difficult even for professional circus acrobats. That's their quote.
Okay, there's Biden. David Shepardson, how is all this playing in Ohio, in Michigan, and what about the polls? Mitt Romney maybe doesn't have Ohio and is talking about maybe having Michigan. Is there merit to that claim?
Well, I don't. I think the polls have shown the president with a broadening lead in Michigan. But look, the Romney campaign thought they could slip this ad in one small market that people wouldn't notice it. And hey, if you can convince some of those blue collar auto workers or the family people who work for Jeep and they're worried about their jobs, if you can move a couple hundred votes, that could be the difference. Ohio could be that close. And instead, what's happened is you've had this 9-day back and forth, and the president himself is going to directly address the Jeep issue today, ramping up, ratcheting up this issue, because it won. This is an issue that the president loves to talk about, the auto bailout. They saved a million jobs, including spinoff jobs. Governor Romney opposed the bailout. I mean, it's the clearest indication of job creation or retention by the administration. And it also goes to the narrative the administration has pounded, that the president made this difficult, unpopular, but yet principled decision, stood up for workers, that the Governor Romney and Wall Street financiers and others opposed saving these blue-collar jobs. So any time that the administration can talk about autos is better than the alternative, which Romney wants to talk about, is the high unemployment rate or the fact that things aren't as good across the country as they should be.
Yep.
And I think you have to say that this constant talk about and the fact that the Romney campaign has said almost nothing except a one written statement suggests that they have been desperately trying to move off this narrative to something else.
Yeah, hey, Margaret, also coincides, yeah.
Yeah, Margaret, let's turn it around in another direction. Hot issue on the Republican side in this week and before has been the Benghazi run-up, the attack on the American consulate there, the emails that Republicans are saying were ignored, that were out there and ignored, the death toll, the ambassador, of course, that didn't need to be. What about truth and fancy when it comes to this side of the ledger, Margaret? The allegation here is cover-up. Mitt Romney scarcely raised it in the foreign policy debate, but what about the legs under the Benghazi story?
Well, again, this was a storyline that did not benefit from Hurricane Superstorm Sandy's landfall. It's unclear how much traction long-term it was going to have in the final weeks of the campaign.
What about truth? Where's the truth in it?
Well, and if you read today in the Washington Post, David Ignatius has a very heart-wrenching sort of TikTok of the CIA response, the U.S. And Libyan response in the hours after.
As the attack was underway, yeah.
Absolutely. And this is still, very much something that is going to be unpacked, and we will see more details come out. But the Romney campaign did not feel as if it benefited them, even going into that final debate, to continue talking about it, partly just because you don't know as much when you're the candidate as you do when you are the administration, and they were on just as when you're a reporter, you know as much as you can know, but we don't know as much as the administration knows. And so they were on uneven footing continuing with this argument, and it was beginning to taper off anyway, but now in terms of the final days of the race, this was always an economy race anyway. It was never clear that foreign policy was Americans' leading concern anyhow, and there were enough, there was enough redeeming evidence that the U.S. didn't sort of flagrantly flaunt, purposefully put these guys in harm's way, that it became a complicated political message for the Romney campaign to further in the final days. But now it's barely factoring in the debate at all.
So, Jack, what's got more traction here? Credibility as a major, major issue. Economy as a major, major issue. We've got the new unemployment numbers out, and it is ticking back up. Back from, it had gone down to 7.8, back up to 7.9. The Labor Department says they've added 171,000 jobs. That's more than were expected by nearly 50,000. On the other hand, there's that employment figure ticking up after all these years, Jack. Credibility or economy? What do you see, digging in here?
Well, I think Mr. Romney has already responded and said, look at that tick up. That's an example. That's going the wrong way. We have to make a change, a big change, as he says, and I'm the man to do it. On the side of credibility, all these issues that are finally coming out around these ads and other matters. By the way, the Ohio papers are really teeing off on Romney on this. The Toledo Blade accuses Romney of dishonesty on the issue. Cleveland Plain Dealer editorial, flailing in Ohio, Romney rolls out Jeep ploy. The Youngstown Vindicator.
The jobs to China claim.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Youngstown Vindicator calls it an insult to Ohioans. The Toledo Blade, something similar. So the local, on the ground in Ohio, this is becoming a negative issue, it seems to me, or a toxic issue at least, for the Romney campaign. Some people say, well, why did they do it? And I think Margaret put her finger on it. This was an effort to get those, few undecided voters to shake things up. It might have backfired.
There's still that big claim, though, from Mitt Romney. Look at the economy. Is this what you want? Here he was yesterday, Doddswell, Virginia.
Do you want to see four more years with rising taxes?
No.
Do you want to see four more years with higher and higher gasoline prices?
No.
Do you want to see four more years with Washington and gridlock?
No.
Look, I know that the president wants to see four more years, and that's his chant, four more years. But our chant is this, five more days, all right? Five more days.
Five more days, and there's Mitt Romney on the trail in Virginia yesterday. We're looking at a big week in the news. Superstorm Sandy barreling down and really battering the East Coast and well beyond, and the final dash to election day. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, well, more Sandy. The Late Show with David Letterman taped as planned on Monday night in New York as the storm came in, but with no audience as the city shut down. Letterman joked about the empty hall with bandleader Paul Schaefer.
Let's run through some of these jokes,
okay.
Paul.
Yeah.
I come out and I say, well, so much for the drought. That would have been the opening.
That would have been a funny opening right there.
It's a whole different perspective when you're sitting here reading them.
Well, there's no, you don't get any reaction.
No, that's about right.
In San Francisco, far from the hurricane, jubilant Giants fans celebrated their World Series win. And Blake Shelton was the big winner at the Country Music Association Awards in Nashville last night, winning Entertainer, Male Vocalist, and Song of the Year. In a tribute to Willie Nelson, Shelton and Keith Urban performed Nelson's Whiskey River.
Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let a memory torture me.
We're looking at a week in the news, Superstorm Sandy and the final dash to Election Day. David Shepardson is with us from the Detroit News. Margaret Tolliff from Bloomberg News. Jack Beatty's here. We heard Romney's call to voters there on the economy, and do you want four more years of this? Here's President Obama with his closing argument. This was yesterday in Green Bay, Wisconsin, talking about goals for a second term.
As long as there's a single American who wants a job but can't find one, our work isn't done. As long as there are families who are working harder but falling behind, our work isn't done. As long as there's a child languishing in poverty, barred from opportunity anywhere in this country, our work is not yet done.
Work not yet done. Margaret Tolliff, what are the polls showing at this point? Here we are. I mean, it's just about 2 seconds to Election Day. How's it look?
Wow. Well, there's two ways to look at polls, right? There are the national daily tracking polls, and then there are the state-by-state polls. And they show slightly different things, although all the polling suggests it's still absolutely a competitive race, a very tight race. But the national polling shows this race tied. And then when you go state-by-state, President Obama does appear fairly consistently to have the edge, sometimes within the margin of error, sometimes a little bit beyond it.
The edge in the Electoral College votes
In more of the battleground states than Governor Romney does, which is why people say that Governor Romney has a tougher path to 270, which is why people say that Ohio is so critical, and which is why Governor Romney is going to Pennsylvania on Sunday, just in case Ohio doesn't work out.
David, what about that? I mean, your outfit is based out of Detroit. You're looking over the border there. If Romney doesn't get Ohio, is there this alternate path? You said it doesn't look so good in Michigan. What about Pennsylvania? What about beyond?
Well, the Romney campaign certainly thinks it can win Minnesota, Pennsylvania, or Michigan, and they have been sending surrogates to Michigan. I mean, even Ann Romney was at the Tigers game. You mentioned the Giants beating the Tigers, unfortunately, in the World Series, and a lot of other surrogates. But the interesting thing is this has been the least competitive race for Michigan in decades. The president hasn't been back to Michigan since April. Governor Romney last was in Michigan in August. I mean, that's really unprecedented. This is a usually very competitive state, although Democrats have won Michigan every time since 1988. But I think the conventional wisdom is that the auto bailout really put that state largely out of reach. That's why the Romney campaign still isn't running ads in Michigan, and that's why they're putting more emphasis on a state like Pennsylvania. And they've really been trying this blue-collar message of, you know, of China. They run a lot of ads in Ohio, Wisconsin, you know, saying the president has not been tough enough on China, that the governor will declare China a currency manipulator on his first day in office, even if that potentially could spark a trade war. So they're trying to make inroads because they've got to, you know, get to that path to 270. And you're right, without a pickup in a state that that appear to be in the Democratic column, it's hard to see Romney winning unless he basically sweeps all of those very close states.
And on top of all that, the storm. I'm not sure how that factors in here. Nashville, Tennessee, William is calling. William, thanks. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom, everybody.
Hi.
That's actually something I wanted to make a note on. What is the likelihood that all the people displaced, some even a great distance, will be able to vote, say they're not registered wherever they're staying now, and how likely is New York to get all of their polling stations back up in time for the election?
Yeah, well, New York and beyond, no doubt. Margaret, how about it? Have you heard? Are there polling places that just won't be open? I've heard of Defense Department trucks coming in to facilitate voting. What do you know about the potential impact on the physical process of voting, Margaret, and whether it might make a difference?
Right. I mean, it's a great question. And the early response and assurances from the utilities was that because so often polling places are in kind of priority places anyways, like mm-hmm. fire stations, schools, courthouses, that sort of thing, that they would have been on the priority list anyway, overwhelmingly. And we saw President Obama calling the utility executives on that first or second day as the storm damage was taking effect. And again, President Obama was doing that so that they could put out a readout and assert how much he's into leadership instead of politics right now. But he was doing that because it's part of his job as president, along with FEMA and so on and so forth. So that's the upfront assurances. That's the plan. That's the early indications. But where the rubber meets the road, how it actually goes down on election day, I mean, you know, we'll certainly be watching. Of course, these are both Democratic states.
Yeah. It doesn't really matter, even if they, in terms of the national. Well, I don't mean it doesn't matter in terms of individuals' vote. That always matters. But if those devastated towns along the coast don't vote in blue states, does that change the overall calculus of outcome here or not?
Not in the Electoral College, Tom, but maybe in terms of the popular vote. I mean, if tens of thousands of voters don't get to the poll, I mean,
with all that implies about the credibility and so on later on. Jim in Providence, Rhode Island. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay.
It all comes down to the economy, like you said, and the governor's response is hilarious. When the unemployment rate went down from 8.3 to 7.9. He said, well, that's because fewer people are not looking for work, that they're discouraged. Well, this time the unemployment rate goes up a tenth of a point because there are more people looking for work and consumer confidence is at a five-year high. And the governor's response today was the economy is stalled. So he speaks double talk when it comes to the economy. I mean, he can't have it both ways.
Well, I mean, you call it double talk, but are you satisfied with 7.9% unemployment, whatever the context, Jim?
Well, it's better than it was when the president took over. And what I'm saying is the governor's response when it went from 8.3 to 7.8.
No, I get it. He's shaving it both ways, but still.
Exactly. And that's been his problem through the whole campaign, is he's trying to have it both ways. When good news comes out on the economy, he's looking for something on the negative side. And then when bad news comes out, you know, he overplays it.
Well, surprise. But bottom line, has there been enough progress for you? I mean, can Barack Obama really say, you know, hey, look, we've made progress. Is it enough progress to justify a second term?
Jim believes it is.
Margaret, what do you say?
Well, can I go back to Ohio, or just bored by Ohio now?
So, no.
because of course there's the nation's unemployment rate, and there's no real statistical evidence to suggest that people will get much more exercise about 7.9 than they do about 7.8, right? But here's the Ohio number. Okay, the peak 10.6% in January 2010,
yep.
Down to 7% in September 2012. Michigan's rate was like almost 14.2%, and now it's down to 9.3.
Right.
So in these, again, and Ohio is so central to both of these campaigns' calculations that part of the reason why Governor Romney's message on, it's not really on the auto ballot, it really is on China and job outsourcing, and part of the reason why that has had trouble resonating as much as he would have liked it to is that 1 out of 8 jobs in the state are tied to the auto industry, and the unemployment rate is down to 7%.
But Jack, here we are, and the president has got to put out this message about progress and carry on. But Americans know that this is still not a good unemployment rate. Now, they can look at all kinds of reasons for that, interpret mm-hmm. them in all kinds of ways. But when President Obama says we're going to leave nobody unemployed, well, how long does it take the bus to get there to pick up those unemployed, Jack?
Yeah, indeed. I mean, both candidates have something to point to here. But, you know, in the firewall, the three states of Iowa, Wisconsin, and Ohio, the firewall that, according to Nate Silver this morning, is, quote, holding for President Obama. Why is it holding? Well, because government has done something for people. There's no question. I mentioned last week the difference between white voters nationally and white voters in these states. Nationally, among white working class voters, low 30s for the president. In Ohio and Wisconsin, and secondarily in Iowa, in the 40s for the president on the same group. Why? Government has done something for them. They can actually see it. Now, of course, that is one of the reasons the Republicans are so rightly afraid of the Affordable Care Act, because someday, perhaps, if the president wins and the act goes through, 30 million odd people can say, well, government has helped to do something for me. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's very hard to argue with. It's not a politician's claim. You have a job or you don't. You have health care or you don't.
Those are benefits. Those are things people feel. I'll come to you, David. Let me get Jim in Red Oak, Iowa. Jim, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm an independent, and I just heard on Fox News this morning that they say that if you're an independent, that means you must be unhappy with the incumbents or you're going to vote for the challenger. And that's just not true for me. I'm an independent because I've been unhappy with most politicians for 20 years.
Okay.
And Romney's lies about the auto industry really have put me to the edge, and I'm going to go right now and vote for Obama. I mean, I'm not crazy about what he's done for the past 4 years, but the lies are enough, and so Obama's going to be my man.
Enough, says independent Jim in Red Oak, Iowa. David Shepherdson, Mitt Romney had momentum going in October. Did Sandy break that? Is Sandy's vote going to be the big one here?
Well, and I also think, you know, the unemployment numbers, you know, are going to be a factor. I mean, today, you know, the economy added 171,000 jobs. More importantly, remember how when that awful August employment report came out, when it was only 92,000 jobs created? That's actually been revised upwards now by 100,000 jobs. So it turns out the economy the last 3 months has been growing stronger. But you made a good point. There's still 23 million people who are out of work, who can't get full-time work. And perhaps the worst statistic is that we are at almost a 40-year low in the labor participation rate. I mean, so many people have dropped out of the workforce because they have gotten frustrated and they can't find jobs. So, yes, it's good news. But one of the reasons that Governor Romney could still win this election is because the economy is still, you know, far from where it would normally be after a recession. You know, too many people are still, they can't find work. They've given up. They can only get part-time
work. That's Mitt Romney's
work.
Core argument, right? It's not good enough. We can do better. I'm a business guy. I can make it happen.
Absolutely.
And that resonates with a lot of people who can't find jobs. On the other hand, the president is always trying to make this a choice. It's not just, are things good enough? Of course they're not. It's you either choose, you know, positions A that the governor has or my choice in terms of how I would run the country for the next 4 years. And that's, you know, are people going to vote based on the future and who they think will do the better job? Or are they going to vote out of sheer frustration about their, you know, low home values or unemployment or all the metrics that the economy is still in not in great shape?
Zach in Columbia, South Carolina. Zach, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a 28-year-old veteran. I served in Iraq under President Obama's administration.
Okay.
I'm currently in law school here in Columbia, South Carolina, and I can speak about leadership. I graduated from West Point. I served as a company commander. I served under a general in Iraq, and President Obama has the kind of vision and long-term understanding of where this country needs to go. And the bottom line is that Governor Romney switching positions, looking to the short-term gain, even though it is an election, it is wholly unacceptable, especially for the office of president. And I think that the American people, despite frustration and numbers, which you've been discussing, those things are not going to last forever. They are not set in stone. And I truly believe that President Obama has the better vision for the future for everyone, for every American that will see us down the road.
Zach, we asked for closing arguments. You're making a big one there, but you've seen how close this is. That means there's a whole big chunk of Americans who aren't lining up with your view, Zach. What do you make of that?
Well, I'm a big fan of Sabermetrics, and I really like Nate Silver. I think that the 538 blog is something that should be looked at and the opinions they're listened to over the pundits who are pushing this race back and forth, making it a constant horse race. I think that the Americans on the ground in these voting districts, they know what's right for the future, and I think that Governor Romney just doesn't have what it takes to make it right.
Zach, we've got it. Margaret, there's Zach, and he's with Nate Silver's electoral map. But those national numbers still do say something about people in this country. We can argue about how close the horse race is or isn't, but that is a big chunk of Americans. Zach makes a strong case, but there's a big chunk of people looking at this another way, looking for something different after these 4 years.
Yeah, when I go to Romney rallies or when I talk to undecided voters, not at rallies, it is overwhelmingly the economy that is the issue that comes to their minds. Many of them either liked President Obama 4 years ago or liked him just fine, you know what I mean? They're like sort of, you know, nothing personal. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are Romney supporters who support him for ideological reasons and because they're Republicans and he's closer to what they stand for. But for many Americans, for the Americans who, you know, are in the sort of swing category, it is about the economy, not whether President Obama deliberately did anything wrong, you know, so much as whether or not he was kind of able to bring it in for a landing, you know, and they're saying, we think 4 years is enough time to have seen more measurable progress than we have. We're just not sure we want to ride it on him anymore. Romney's a businessman. Romney knows how to make money. And this is an argument that does resonate with many American voters, and it is the core argument that Romney is counting
on. It's been a long, long campaign. We opened with that little girl in Colorado whose mom listened to so much NPR. She said, I've had enough of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, David Shepardson. What about that factor here? People just ready to vote and move on.
Well, not even just that, Tom. Think about how many, you know, tens of millions of people have already voted.
Yep.
I mean, I think going forward, this whole idea of Election Day is going to change. And as people vote earlier and earlier, get away from the date of the election, it's going to be Election Day, September 30th or something. And it's going to be harder for these candidates to make that closing argument.
You know, but in spite of that, all that early voting, Jack, after all the super PAC and ads and everything else, I can't wait to see just the straightforward act of voting. The lines at the polls will be a welcome sight after all these months, Jack.
Oh, especially after those ads. One Cincinnati man reported seeing 16 political ads in a row recently.
Well, here we go. Election Day right around the corner now. Americans, vote. That's what we say.
We say
vote. Margaret Tolla with Bloomberg News. Thanks for being with us today, Margaret.
Thank you.
David Shepardson with the Detroit News. Thanks so much, David.
Always a pleasure, Tom.
And Jack Beatty. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks to you. This is On Point.